Welcome to Kentish, the Formula Ford podcast. I'm Jacques Treset. With us today for our first episode is fellow Wisconsinite Reed Hazelton. Reed is a very accomplished Formula Ford racer. He's a very astute student of the sport. Wherever I've seen him, he's not only tuning his car, but helping out others. And he's a great, great asset to the sport. One issue I'm going to bring up with the podcast today is, in recording, I made one big mistake. I have three dogs, Remy, Fuji, and Spock, who are a delight. And of course, Reed has his own very famous dog, Poppy. I forgot to put my dogs away during this recording, so you're going to hear collars bouncing around quite often. So my apologies on that. Hopefully it isn't too terrible. Hopefully that does not affect the content thereof, but I hope you enjoy. Again, it's always great to hear from Reed. And going forward, if you have somebody you'd like to nominate or you yourself would like to be on Kentish, just let me know. You can find my contact information on the Kentish Facebook page. So without further ado, here's Reed Hazelton. Reed, welcome.
Thank you.
I guess we'll start in the beginning. How did you get into the sport of auto racing?
When I was a kid, my parents owned a go-kart track, more like an amusement-type go-kart track than a racing one. So did that, obviously, quite a bit when you have a go-kart track in your backyard. That's what you do on your Friday nights.
Yeah.
My parents sold that in about 93, mm-hmm. I believe, and missed it kind of ever since. And then when I was a junior in college, a friend of mine owned a carpet insulation company,
mm-hmm.
and one of his customers had this Japanese sports car they didn't know what to do with in their garage, and they didn't want it.
Okay.
So he told me about it, and I went and looked at it, and turned out to be an RX-7.
Yeah.
So I bought it, and then...
Random Japanese sports car.
Yeah. So then slowly started turning it into a race car, kind mm-hmm. of in disguise, as I was just going to fix it and sell it, because my mom was very much against the idea.
Yeah.
But then, like, once you got the interior, you really can't sell the car at that point, so you
right.
just have to turn it into a race car.
I mean, that's, you gotta.
Yeah.
There's no other choice. You have lemons, you make lemonade.
So I did that. The year I graduated college, ran it with Midwestern Council,
mm-hmm.
and then sold that and bought a Formula Ford.
And for those of our listeners that are not from the United States, Midwest Council is kind of a regional car club here in the, yeah. in the Midwest sector yep. around the Great Lakes.
Yep. Yeah, it's very family-oriented, kind of the local.
Low-key.
You
know,
you work on it on Saturday, race it on Sunday.
Yeah, awesome. So with that being said, you worked your way into Formula Ford, and kind of what made you decide that Formula Ford was right for you?
It was the cheapest real race car I could get into.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone said, like, if you want to learn how to drive and work on race cars, like, go get a Formula Ford.
Yeah.
So I looked for the newest one I could afford, and that was the 92.
Yeah. And it's interesting, when I first got into sports car racing out of karting back in 2004, we looked at three classes. One was Formula Ford, one was Formula 500, and one was Spec Miata. And we went the fendered route.
Oof.
and spent many a dollar on fenders,
yeah.
as it were.
Yeah.
So, and with that being said, the car that you bought, your first Formula Ford, is your current Formula Ford.
Yep.
And that's a 92 Van Diemen RF92.
Yep.
Tell me a bit about it.
So I bought it from Bruce Lindstrand, owns a very good prep shop in Darien. So I didn't know much about, or really anything about, purpose-built cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, buy it from someone that does. I knew it wasn't going to be a car that had problems and I could just get in and drive it.
Yeah.
And not have to worry about all the teething issues or when people say it's race ready.
Yeah.
And it's
about
oftentimes
that.
Not.
Yeah.
So it was a good car. You know, I drove it as I got it for probably 3-4 weekends.
Yeah.
So.
And your car in specific has a little bit of history across the pond.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad did some research through Van Diemen, and they think it's the car that was a factory lease car to Jackie Schechter,
mm-hmm.
and he ran it in South Africa for a while, and then they think this car also went to France at some point and won a festival there.
Got it.
And then it kind of floated around for a while until Bruce Lindstrand imported it in 96.
So your car is a world traveler. So
it is.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. And the 92 Van Diemen in specific, it's got a very interesting characteristic in that it is a it is a monoshock front end. It doesn't have four shocks in the car. It's got three.
Yeah, it's missing one.
How's that work?
It works well. It makes a good amount of grip, mm-hmm. except when you hit a bump or the corners become slow.
Got it.
So the faster and smoother, the better. So like at Road America, turn one, it's really good.
Yeah.
At track like Groton or Blackhawk, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
So it lacks, with only one shock in front,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't have as much dampening and roll as traditional four-shock cars do.
Yeah.
So it's a little nervous through a lot of the corners.
Yeah.
It's real twitchy.
And you've made some updates through the years to make it a little bit more streamlined, keep up with the modern cars, yeah. just a pinch.
Yeah. Different side pods, different engine cover. In 92, they had the header that exited out the side, but it looked really cool. It was mm-hmm. kind of a big parachute, so I had a over-the-top header like a DB1 made,
mm-hmm.
and then that kind of comes through the center to incorporate the different engine cover.
Yeah. So just minor tweaks overall.
Yeah.
It's not like you're changing the suspension geometry or anything.
No, it's actually,
like
the chassis is all stock 92 Van Diemen.
That's fantastic. And we have to mention, with this primarily stock Van Diemen, you to this day own the Road America track record, a lap time of 221.037 that you set in the 2013 SEC runoffs, where you finished second by a pinch.
I never really wanted to win the runoffs. It was just setting the fast lap and leading laps. I wanted to spread the winning out to more people as I could.
So. Yeah, because that's the thing. You've won a lot of races in your life, and you've led the runoffs. That race you had in 2013 mm-hmm. with Tim Kautz, mm-hmm. who had his traditional Piper with a mm-hmm. Honda in it, you probably had by far the best handling car, but with the Honda. And we might as well just get into it. But let's talk about the Honda.
Trigger warning.
Okay, and so I got into Formula Ford in 2010. Mm-hmm. That was the summer I met you. That was the summer that the Honda was first kind of introduced.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Formula Ford, since 67, it started with the Cortina. Then it went with the Kent. Overseas, they went with the Z-Tech motor. It's always kind of been a one-brand deal. And through Ford's lack of efforts in the 2000s, or at least that was the reason, the blocks became kind of hard to find. And Honda jumped on it with all four legs. And I guess, give me your thoughts on when Honda entered the spectrum, how Formula Ford changed.
I guess it depends where you sit and what your perspective is on it. For some people, it was good. For some people, it was bad.
Yeah.
For SCCA, I don't think it was particularly beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
It raised the cost of entry pretty significantly. Like I paid $13,000 for my car
mm-hmm.
as a kid fresh out of college.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do that today.
I
think those days are long gone.
Yeah.
Part of it is just the economics of it, and part of it's the Honda.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to buy a semi-competitive car for $13,000. You know, the price to get into it has all escalated pretty significantly.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the Honda was very beneficial for the F1600 series, because without Honda, that never would have existed.
Right. It made a pay-to-play kind of a deal out of it. It was similar to what kind of Atlantic's was in the 70s. Sure. You know, your entry cost is going to be everything you have and half your house.
Yeah.
To go race. And, you know, when I got into Ford, it was with a vintage car. So we, as opposed to running with the rest of the fleet, we all had the same kind of stuff.
Yep.
Now, granted, I took my vintage car and ran SCCA Nationals and actually had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I could see the writing on the wall in at Blackhawk back in 2010. I got lapped by Tim with his Piper, mm-hmm. and he had the Honda in it. And he didn't catch me at first coming through the corners. And then on the straightaway, he was probably about 30 car lengths behind and just motored by. Yeah. And I said, that's, and with all due respect to Tim, he's a hell of a driver. He's got a great car, but I could not for the life of me see how a top-rated Kent motor could ever keep up with that in a straight line.
Yeah, when they brought the Honda in, the intent, or at least they said in the beginning, was we wanted to be equal to an average Kent
mm-hmm.
on the dyno.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once it got in, the people with the Hondas were saying, we're not competitive. And at that time, they weren't with that restrictor.
Mm-hmm.
And they got it bumped up to where they were. They're making equal power on the dyno.
Yeah.
But on the racetrack, making carburetors and fuel injection play together.
It doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
It didn't work in that. It didn't work when I ran Formula 500 and we were up against the Formula 600s, yeah. which... Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah. Unless you have Jay Ivey sitting on the engine, rejetting it 100 times down the straightaway.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be equal.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yeah, I heard that's not very aerodynamic to have somebody sitting on your engine cover
tuning. Not well.
No, yeah. no. Yeah. Even Jay.
Yeah.
So with that being said, so you've run one car primarily through all these years, but you've dabbled in some other people's machinery.
Yeah.
Let's hear a bit about that. We can start with, I know you ran the 2014 Pro Series for two events.
Ah, yeah, it was in Bob Melvin's 2001 Van Diemen with a Honda.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good car. Makes a lot of grip like all the newer Van Diemens do. The Honda was nice to have.
Yeah.
It drafts surprisingly well.
Yeah.
I think when you get in that little vacuum of air behind a car, the Fords tend to go a little fat.
Mm-hmm.
And the Honda stays right where it should be, and when you pull out, you just motor by. Where at the Ford, you kind of peter by.
Yeah.
Or you just get next to him, and that's where you stall out.
Could you tell any differences? Like, let's say you had your Van Diemen, mm-hmm. and you plugged a Honda in it at that event. Do you think there was a big difference between the 2001 Van Diemen and your own car? Do you think it would have fared?
Yeah, I think chassis to chassis, I think it can be pretty equal. It's a little shorter of a wheelbase, so it's a bit more unstable.
Mm-hmm.
It wiggles a lot through the corners, especially without the dampening in the front.
Mm-hmm.
It always seemed like it would create these oscillations that would manifest in the rear.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd really dance through the corner where it looked cool. It wasn't particularly the most fun thing to drive for 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But the newer cars feel like they're much more planted.
Right.
Like they really get into the asphalt better. Than some of the older stuff.
And it's a wider setup, a wider track throughout. So with that being said, let's hit some rapid fire questions. Not that they're going to be that rapid because it's me talking.
It's me thinking.
But so. if you were to be, I know you've toned down your racing in recent years. Yeah. And actually, let's go into that first. So you didn't race for a few years and then got back into it. I believe you won the 50th at Indianapolis back in 2018.
Yep.
And you won by quite a margin, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So that must have felt good to know that it was a few years out and you still knew where the pedals were.
Yep. Well, mostly.
Yeah. Well, that says a lot about your skill behind the wheel.
Thank you.
And then this past year, the Formula Ford 50th at Road America, you won Group 13 overall, which I know it was shortened due to an incident. But that whole weekend, you basically made the rest of us look like you were in a different field than. The other 172 that showed up.
Home track advantage.
There is that. I had that, but I'm just me. So, I mean, that was quite the exhibition you put on.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so if it came to be where you won the lottery today and you're not buying toilet paper like everyone else.
Oof, okay.
I know.
Okay. Option one out the window.
Exactly. So if you win the lottery, but you can only spend it by buying a car and running a series, what would you do for 2020? When racing starts again.
Ooh. Probably, I like to go where the most competition is. So that would be the F1600 series, no doubt. The car I would pick would probably have to be... I'm not sure who owns it anymore, but it was Jeremy Grenier's Citation. I think that was probably the car to have.
Yeah.
And still is.
Interesting.
Yeah, I've always liked the Citations.
Yeah, absolutely American-made.
Yeah, yeah. The brain trust of Steve Lathrop, Ren Keith, and Brandon Dixon, I think is pretty tough to beat.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Awesome. With that being said, when we talk about the brain trust and basically people we've all been around in the sport, if you were to look at the history of your time in the sport, is there somebody you'd like to call a shout-out to as being, You should have made it. You could have made it. They're perhaps underrated or underappreciated. Sure. Who would that be?
Sure. I'd probably say Dave Livingston.
Okay.
He still drives. I shouldn't say was. Sorry, Dave. Always seemed like the guy that was always there at the end.
Yeah.
Like he never had bad luck. Well, we've all had bad luck, but he didn't seem to have systemic bad luck.
Mm-hmm.
But he also never got that good luck break that, got him on the podium at sprints or runoffs.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So.
And then when we look at your time in the sport, did you have any guys you looked up to, heroes of the sport that you aspire to drive like or be like?
Oh, Scott Rubenzer.
Yeah. No doubt. Scotty's the man.
Yeah, he's who I want to be when I grow up. So he's cool.
Are you and I ever going to grow up? I guess that's another question for another podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I suppose you kind of have to, but I don't know.
I don't know. I know some 85-year-olds who will never grow up. So that's my aspiration. In terms of the future of Formula Ford or Formula F, I'm going to retain Formula Ford because that's what it is. We're not about Hondas. We'll talk about it. We'll debate it. We'll respect those who run it, but that's a different thing. Where do you think Formula Ford's going to be in the long run? Where do you think it'll be found and why?
Ooh, probably a little bit more pessimistic on this than most people. But I think we're going to see a pretty steep decline in road racing as a whole.
Yeah.
Particularly at the amateur level. Mm-hmm. There's just not that many younger people coming into it because it's just too expensive.
Yeah.
I remember multiple times when I first started, people would stand around, you know, at Saturday night parties or at board meetings at the runoffs, and it was always the same question of where's all the new people? Where's the young blood?
Mm-hmm.
And as the one in the room that was a good 20, 30 years younger than most other people, nobody ever asked me how you came here or why you got here.
Right.
So there seemed like there was this generational disconnect of what they thought younger people wanted and what the younger people actually wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's not so much about an H pattern shifter as it is about a car that costs $40,000.
Right. I look at my personal expenses and just living.
Yeah.
You know, to get into it now would be just impossible.
Yeah.
But on the same token, I have seen Formula Ford, Historic Ford, and Club Ford pick up on the vintage end of things.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
When there's a vintage series that is economical to run.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, track rental isn't cheap. Mm-hmm. Making sure that ambulance there isn't cheap.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see where things go going forward. Do you think that the cost of just life is the biggest threat to Formula Ford, or do you think it's continually going to be Honda or other sanctioned series? I mean, what are your thoughts?
I think as a whole now, I think the Honda helped bring the cost down where it pushed it up in the beginning. Now it's somewhat stabilized. You can get a used Honda powered car for around 30.
Yeah.
For a good one. There's some DB1s out there that were converted you can get for upper 20s.
Yeah.
That's a real good deal. Where it goes from there, it's kind of hard to tell.
Right.
Even if you look at the kind of the age of the volunteers, there's not many under 30 that are volunteering. And when it gets to the point where you have to start paying those corner workers, those tech inspectors, I think it's going to be one of those kind of those curves that just drops off a cliff.
And then, okay, you're a car owner, you're a driver. Mm-hmm. Let's say there is a you somewhere who's getting out of college or maybe a little younger, who somehow has the money or just lucks into seeing a Formula Ford on Craigslist, which, by the way, go out there. They're out there.
Yeah.
Why should they go race Formula Ford?
They're fun. They're not the fastest in the straight line, but for me, they're still the most fun car to drive. They move around a lot. There's no downforce to really plant them to the ground. You have to drive it. I think it's one of the few classes that's still more dependent on the driver than the car. The car definitely matters, but it's not like other cars where if you don't have an 016 Atlantic, like, you're not going to win.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, and that's ultimately proved. I mean, you have an 18-year-old car that could still battle front running with the Hondas. I mean, you probably have one of, you know, a few packages that'll still keep up and cause a threat.
Yeah.
And if anything, throw egg on face of, you know, people that are spending 75, 80 grand for a Formula Ford and you go out there and show up. Whose face is on your SCCA membership card?
Michael Schumacher.
Yeah. It's not you.
No.
Last time I checked, you're not a world champion.
No, the hairline's getting closer.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Awesome.
No, at registration, there's only been one person that's ever looked at that and went, wait a minute.
I get a lot of times people don't know how to say my name. I'm Jackie. I'm Jacques.
Yeah.
On the personal end of things, what is it you do for a living?
Right now, my most full-time thing is I'm a law student at Marquette Law School in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
But when I'm not reading books about federal civil procedure, have a company with Bob Melvin called American Pen Company in Denver, Colorado.
Got it. And you guys make, obviously, American-made pens?
Yep.
Ship them all over?
Yep.
Small quantity, large quantity, you're basically all in.
Any quantity.
Yeah. Throw away your pencils. Go see you. And what was the thing about pencils? Whatever happened to the number one pencil? I've never seen one.
It got pushed out, like the Ford getting pushed out by the Honda.
There you go. I mean, I've never seen one. All I remember is taking our Scantron test in school and saying, make sure they're number twos. And I've never seen a number one.
I didn't know there was a different option.
Yeah. It's like seeing the weight in SECA looking at the GCR for Cortina powered motors. It's 1050 still. Now, granted, my weight doesn't matter. I nullify that. It could just be me carrying four wheels. It just wouldn't matter. All right. And the last one's kind of a personality test. Ooh, for you.
Yeah, that's a fail.
All right. So in baseball, when a batter comes up to the plate, they have a walk-off song.
Okay.
Let's say in the sport of auto racing, there's the same equivalent. What's yours? Okay.
Oh, man. There's an independent hip-hop label from Minneapolis called Rhymesayers, and one of their favorite artists is Brother Ali.
Mm-hmm.
So probably anything from him.
Awesome.
Would be my guess.
Awesome. So, and that fits the character well.
Good. Yeah. White guy from the suburbs. Like, what am I supposed to listen to?
I don't know. I've never been sure what to answer that question. Right now, for me, it's Amy Winehouse. I'm about 15 years late on that. But if you haven't, check out her catalog because it's outstanding. With that said, Reed, I mean, we're kind of done here. Is there anything else you want to throw in?
Always the mandatory shout out to the workers and volunteers that make it happen. It's a special breed of person that gives up 2 weeks vacation to go stand in the sun and rain and get yelled at by drivers.
Absolutely.
Just to flag a race. So
absolutely.
Shout out to those people. All the mechanics and volunteers. That would have to be my dad and my best friend from high school, Ken Jones. Without them, I would have been even more busy at the track. So you definitely need some help, and they are the ones helping me.
Good man. Staying humble. You'd never know you're from Wisconsin.
Awesome. Except for the block of cheese I walked in with.
You know about that. Yeah, my dog's had a field day with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody needs cheese.
Everyone, except me and my arteries and everyone. Well, Reed, thank you so much for being basically our taste tester here for Kentish, our first episode. You pulled the tag off this one, so we appreciate it.
Happy to.
Hopefully we can have you back in the future when you're winning even more FF races.
Sounds good.
Awesome, man. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
As always, you find people in the Formula Ford paddock like Reed, who are an absolute joy to speak to and who understand what it all takes to make this all happen. Thank you for staying tuned to Kentish, the Formula Ford podcast. We don't have any sponsors to thank. It's just me and my phone as of right now. If any of you have results or anything you'd like to send me going forward for me to publicize on Kentish, I'd be more than happy. We'll see where things go. Again, this is Jacques Driesen. You've been listening to Kentish, the Formula Ford podcast. Cheers.